Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we've got some hot topics for you, including highlights from Politics in Paradise, the latest on the minimum wage increase, a story on an energy company that wants to come to Hakumba, and what you should know about controversies involving them elsewhere. You'll hear about some free energy workshops in El Cajon, the latest on the drought statewide, and a sneaky tactic by yet another energy company to ban an elected planning official from secret meetings with community members. We'll tell you about back to school at San Diego State. We'll tell you about East County Magazine's investigation into that insurance company that's been in the news for paying off a debt to a disabled man with a truckload of coins. You'll hear about toxins being banned at National Wildlife Refuges. We'll tell you about a program that's music to the ears of local music students. And we'll have some Best of East County features, including a story about a new exhibit at the Barona Museum, our Vines and Wines correspondent on the road in Ramona, and you'll hear our Best of East County interview with Larry Poole, a movie stuntman. So stay tuned. We'll have all of that and more coming up on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. Many of East County's elected officials gathered Thursday night for the annual Politics in Paradise event sponsored by the local chambers of commerce. East County Magazine reporter Janice Russell was on hand, and here is her report.
This is Janice Russell with East County Magazine. I'm here at Politics in Paradise, where six elected representatives shared their views based on the questions the community had submitted. All of the panelists were Republican, except for Mayor Mary Sessom, and East County's two Democratic congressional members, Susan Davis and Juan Vargas, were not present. Thus, the evening was skewed towards conservative views. East County's two Democratic congressional members, Susan Davis and Juan Vargas, were not invited.
The representatives were
U.S. Representative Duncan D. Hunter, State Senator Joel Anderson, Assemblyman Brian Jones, Mayor Mary Sessom of Lemon Grove, in place of Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, who wasn't able to make it, County Supervisor Diane Jacob, and San Diego County Treasurer and Tax Collector Dan McAllister. This event was organized by the Collective Chambers of the East County Region.
First, before John Bolthouse from the Water Conservation Garden, where the event was held, led the Pledge of Allegiance, he mentioned about U.S. armed forces possibly serving in the Iraqi skies, and just this morning, the U.S. bombed Iraq.
In the news about 30 minutes ago, there's an indication that our armed forces may actually be in service in the skies above Iraq. I think it's appropriate we stand and give a Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
The facilitator for the evening was Grossmont Healthcare District CEO Barry Jance. The first question was about Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez's proposed bill to provide diapers for low-income parents of babies. U.S. Representative Duncan D. Hunter was adamant that he did not support additional welfare programs. He cited welfare statistics, slightly misleading the audience that it was far more expensive than defense spending. He included in these statistics Social Security benefits and tax rebates as welfare programs, which they are not.
Okay, so I just got the numbers today on how much we spend on all of welfare. If you add in food stamps, if you add in Social Security disability, and you add in welfare, it's about $700 billion. If you add in all of the state and local liabilities that are then reimbursed by the federal government and the tax rebates, it's about $1 trillion. The defense budget is $600 billion. Point is, you need less welfare right now, not more. We spend enough already on welfare, period.
Sessom was the only leader sympathetic to the diaper program, but being concerned about landfill issues and the environment, favored diaper services over disposable diapers.
I've got an 18-month-old grandson, but I got a lot of stuff. And with all this current awareness of climate change, of sustainability, of greenhouse gas emissions, of landfill stuff, I think that bill, if it's written that it can be any kind of diapers, is wrong. It should be diaper services. forget disposables. Diaper services, I could support that.
Senator Anderson gave a qualified response to this question.
Well, I actually voted against it. I don't think that we'd have a problem reaching out, helping, lifting people. I think that we're all very generous people, but we want to see a return on results.
One question a community member asked was, how can Congress solve the immigration problem? Duncan Hunter mentioned that the House just passed House Resolution 675, which is paying for the National Guard reimbursement to the governors who ought to secure their borders.
He also mentioned that before fixing the complex immigration issues, the border should be secured first. Supervisor Diane Jacob acknowledged thanks to Duncan Hunter Sr. When he was in Congress, he pushed hard and was diligent about getting the border fence built. Jacob mentioned that she was at a briefing on August 6th with the commissioner and head of the Border Patrol, and they talked about the unaccompanied minors issue. 60,000 today have come into Texas, and the number in San Diego County is 415, and there have been no gang members coming in.
Someone else mentioned that San Diego and East County are experiencing an increasing trend in the microbrewery population, and they ask, how do you see the future of such emerging business, considering the conditions for the CUP licenses are becoming increasingly restrictive? Supervisor Jacob mentioned that the Board of Supervisors set out to reduce regulations, and it started with the Boutique Winery Ordinance. She also said that they just decided that they would promote the microbrewery industry, cheesemaking, olive oil, and other agricultural endeavors by making sure that they take a look at those and reduce regulations, cut the red tape and streamlining, and then they'll take action on the work plan.
Mayor Sessa mentioned that they should look at the benefit of having some industry in our small cities that attracts people to come and shop in the stores. And with Lemon Grove, the CUP process is probably one of the easiest. Senator Anderson thought that he and Assemblyman Brian Jones needed to work with community colleges and state colleges to increase the number of parking spaces, since this is the greatest brewery city. Another question was about the state water bond and if California will soon be getting one. Conservative members present said that surface storage was the number one issue, but environmentalists oppose it. Senator Anderson mentioned that the water bill has been on the ballot. A big issue is surface storage for the Central Valley, for the consistent amount of water to come through, and they were capturing all the water they could from Northern California. Assemblyman Jones then shared his views.
Joel is correct in that we started the year in January with three bond proposals. None of those could get done. There was a new bond proposal today, $8.7 billion. The current bond on the ballot is $11 billion. But here's what we all need to understand as taxpayers in California. The annual budget for the state of California went up this year $12 billion. So if we just spent last year what we spent last year, we could pay cash for a $12 billion water infrastructure program rather than going into debt for it. Surface storage is probably the number one issue the environmentalists absolutely will not support.
U.S. Representative Hunter mentioned that the House, Senate, and the President just passed a Water Resources Redevelopment Act, which authorizes the Army Corps of Engineers on any project that's already been started, and they do water projects throughout the U.S. His emphasis was that the issue was beyond partisan squabbles. Then a question was asked about affordable housing on state-owned land.
How would you feel about county, city, or state pensions investing in building affordable housing on state, county, or state-owned land?
San Diego County Treasurer and Tax Collector Dan McAllister answered first.
If there was a guaranteed revenue stream back and a guaranteed interest rate that was paid, and it was a reasonable investment, then it would make some sense economically. We're always open and we're always looking at new investment options, and if that's something that could work, I think it's worth trying.
Hunter disagreed with McAllister. He says the government property is the citizens' property, and that East County families who have owned land for many years can't subdivide it because the county has reduced the number of acres on their property. They devalue the property through the county plan, and they buy it out for money. Mayor Sessom agreed with McAllister, and she says that they can get a stream of revenue for it. However, Supervisor Jacob agreed with Duncan Hunter, and she cannot see how it would be a good investment. Assemblyman Brian Jones thought it's the government's responsibility to provide housing, and the government shouldn't build at all. Mayor Mary Sessom said that the cities and the county must meet targets on building affordable housing, and that's from the state. Assemblyman Brian Jones agreed with Mary, but he said that the solution is to change the majority party in Sacramento and that regulations can be changed, which drew applause from the crowd. Supervisor Diane Jacob agreed with Mary and Brian.
Brian's absolutely right. Mary hit it on the head. And I think one thing not to ever forget
that the counties and the cities are at the local level where the rubber meets the road.
And State Senator Joel Anderson agreed with everyone else. Finally, everyone gave the closing statements. U.S. Representative Duncan Thie Hunter said that he tries to let everyone know where he stands, and he tries to do the best he can and work really hard. Mayor Mary Sessom said that East County doesn't weigh in often enough, and that the city doesn't hear enough from their citizens about what they think. She encouraged everyone to contact their city council mayors. Assemblyman Brian Jones pointed out that there's a difference between the Democrats at the local level and at the state level, and he mentioned how there are things wrong at the California government, but it's still a great state. Supervisor Jacob mentioned that she is taking on a new project concerning Alzheimer's disease, and she gave some statistics. 60,000 people live with Alzheimer's in San Diego County. It's the third cause of death here, and it's the sixth in the nation. 150,000 San Diegans are caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's or dementia. She also scheduled the Board of Supervisors Conference on December 2nd, and she encouraged everyone to get involved if they wanted to. Dan McAllister took pride in what he does, knowing that he serves the people of the greatest county in the country, and he's proud that they're able to perform the school bond issues by cutting them down and making sure that they're not happening again. And then State Senator Joel Anderson said that it is a privilege to be serving the citizens in Sacramento. This is Janice Russell with East County Magazine. I'm here at Politics in Paradise at the Water Conservation Garden, where elected representatives shared their views based on questions the community had submitted. And this event was sponsored by the Collective Chambers of the East County Region.
San Diego Mayor Kevin Falconer has vetoed the minimum wage and sick leave ordinance previously approved by the City Council. The measure would increase minimum wage in the city to $9.75 on January 1, 2015. To $10.50 in January 2016 and to $11.50 in January 2017. By 2019, it would be indexed to inflation. In addition, the 5-day earned sick leave would allow workers to stay home when ill or when a family member is ill. The mayor issued the following statement, quote, "This ordinance unfairly pits working families and our city against economic realities that will make it even harder for San Diego to thrive. I cannot support putting the brakes on our economy," said the mayor, adding, "I believe we can and must work together in unison, workers, businesses, and government, to move San Diego forward." But according to Raise Up San Diego, a coalition that was formed to support the minimum wage ordinance, a new poll found that almost two-thirds of voters, 63%, support the earned sick days and minimum wage ordinance approved by the City Council last month. The poll was conducted from July 31st to August 4th by Greenberg Quinlan Rossner Research. They also quote, Viviana Luganas, a full-time San Diego student also working a part-time job, she said, "I'm heartbroken. The earned sick days and a minimum wage ordinance meant families like mine would have the ability to keep up with the rent and put groceries on the table. The mayor is taking away a chance to make ends meet from hundreds of thousands of families." That heartbreak likely won't last long, however, since the city council is expected to override the mayor's veto with a two-thirds majority after council returns from the August recess in a month. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. For planners and residents in East County, keeping track of proposed industrial solar projects has begun to resemble a game of whack-a-mole. One vanishes and another pops up in its place. Such is the case in Hacumba Hot Springs, where NextEra Energy has purchased a site formerly owned by BP Solar at Old Highway 80 and Carrizo Gorge. That's next to the international border and just west of the new Eco substation. BP pulled out of the solar industry and canceled its own plan for the site. Now NextEra hopes to build a 200 to 300-acre solar project there. NextEra was named number one among electric and gas utilities on Fortune magazine's list of world's most admired companies. But NextEra has also drawn strong criticism from Native Americans over desecration of sacred geoglyphs, from neighbors of wind projects over the company's heavy-handed tactics toward project opponents, and from environmentalists over birds killed at its Genesis solar project. The company's Blythe Millennial and McCoy Desert solar projects were approved by the U.S. Bureau of Land Management despite widespread opposition from Native American groups who oppose the destruction or desecration of ancient sacred geoglyphs. Alfredo Figueroa, founder of La Cuna de Aztlan Sacred Sites Protection Circle, says there is no way that any of these sites can be mitigated. The Congress of American Indians, Colorado Indian Tribes, Intertribal Council of Arizona, and the Committee on Chicano Rights all opposed these NextEra projects. But several giant geoglyphs believed to be thousands of years old have reportedly already been destroyed there. The massive symbols marked on the land and visible from the air are in an area believed to be the cradle of the Nahuatl people, and that tribe's most famous branch, the Aztecs, later migrated south and conquered most of Mexico. Now, NextEra also sued a Canadian activist for trademark infringement after she posted a video of a bald eagle nest being destroyed to make way for a NextEra wind turbine, along with a parody of the company's logo, which she changed to read NextEra. The Canadian project has been built and the suit remains pending, although the heartbroken activist has since announced plans to move out of the area. At NextEra's New Genesis solar facility in the desert, the trough solar system with parabolic mirrors has resulted in over 31 bird deaths shortly after opening, including waterfowl and pelicans. One theory is that the massive array of mirrors resembles water, actually attracting migrating birds, a special concern during drought conditions when water is scarce. Jesse Marshall with NextEra has asked the Jacamba Hot Springs sponsor group to hold a special meeting on the proposed local project. But Howard Cook, chair of the community's planning group, has advised that due to lack of a quorum in August, the issue will likely need to wait until the next regularly scheduled meeting in September. Meanwhile, in Boulevard, a flood of negative public comments to county planners have documented valid reasons to suspect that Soitec Solar severely underestimated the amount of water that construction of its proposed multiple solar projects would need. Now the company has advised local planners that it intends to put some of these projects on the back burner for now, but will press forward with its rugged solar site at the gateway to McCain Valley. Soitec retains the right to revive those projects at a later date, however. Donna Tisdale, chair of Boulevard's planning group, has this to say. There is no need for industrial-scale rural solar projects or transmission projects that increase fire risk, impede firefighting, destroy carbon-sequestering arid soils and vegetation, increase dust and dust-borne pathogens, consume millions of gallons of water, and degrade property values and tourism draw, Tisdale wrote in an email to East County Magazine. She and many rural residents in this area think that a smarter alternative is for energy to be produced and stored where the most energy is used. Tisdale, who has done battle with several proposed industrial wind projects in her rural community as well as solar projects, is weary of the constant onslaught. It would be less expensive and destructive to upgrade the existing electrical infrastructure in urban and suburban areas, she concludes, than to convert rural lands into energy sacrifice and export zones.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
That's a sound we haven't heard much in California recently, the sound of rainfall. California's drought is now in its third year, and it's taken a sharp turn for the worse. Virtually all of California, over 99%, is now in severe drought situation or worse. Nearly 82% is in extreme drought, including San Diego County, and over half the state is now in exceptional drought conditions. That's the worst possible rating. CAL FIRE Chief Tony Meacham says the challenges drought has presented to CAL FIRE are huge. We have entire counties in California that are going to run out of water, he warned. Earlier this year, the state's Department of Public Health found that at least 17 rural water districts could soon run out of water completely, though none of those are in San Diego County as of yet. Chief Meacham spoke in a forum Thursday night in Boulevard for residents to meet their new fire officials. He warns that even drier times are ahead, with little prospect for rain in the hottest months of the year yet to come. And he admits, "I'm scared to death if we don't get rain this winter." CAL FIRE has banned open burning on 31 million acres under state control due to the wildfire concerns. CAL FIRE has responded to over 2,100 fires so far this year. That's a 70% increase over the average for this time period in past years. Concerns were echoed at a later meeting of the Boulevard Planning Group, where County Geologist Jim Bennett spoke. He warned, if this continues another year or two, it would be the worst drought we've ever seen, and I think we're on the cusp of it. A new statewide study of major groundwater basins found some serious local problems. The legislature has introduced two measures, AB 1739 and SB 1168, to monitor groundwater. These are proposals that Bennett called the most radical change proposed since I've been here. In East County, 50,000 people are totally dependent on groundwater. The legislation would give local agencies the authority to meter and monitor wells with a goal of attaining sustainability, and it would be mandatory in the largest districts where measurements have been taken. For example, Borrego Springs has an overdraft issue so serious that it will need to reduce pumping by 70% to be sustainable. But despite controversies over developers and energy companies sucking up massive amounts of groundwater for industrial-scale projects, no monitoring of wells in Boulevard or Jacumba has yet been done by the state, and that's due to the relatively small size of those aquifers and the geology of the region. So far, California has lost $2.2 billion and 17,000 agricultural jobs due to the drought. 26 counties have established drought task forces, as has Governor Jerry Brown at the state level, but so far, San Diego County does not yet have a drought task force assembled. Reservoir levels remain very low statewide, with many at 35% capacity and some much lower. Mandatory water restrictions are now being imposed by numerous water agencies. Jay Farnaglietti, a water cycle scientist for NASA and the University of California at Irvine, warns in a documentary film titled Last Call at the Oasis that California has only a 2-year water supply left overall, and if rainfall does not replenish those levels, the entire state could run out of water. The State Water Board's drinking water program has stepped in to assist some communities that are facing emergency drinking water shortages already. California's Department of Social Services has provided 172,000 boxes of food to food banks in drought-impacted counties where people can't grow their food, and the state has allocated $687 million in drought funding through emergency legislation, including $61 million to address emergency water, food aid, and housing assistance to drought-impacted communities. Celebrities, including pop singer Lady Gaga and comedian Conan O'Brien, have stepped forward as spokespeople in a campaign the state is running, urging Californians to cut their water use. Lynn Wilson, an academic chair at Kaplan University, also serves on the climate change delegation in the United Nations, and she raises the most dire scenario of all. If the state continues on this path, she cautions, there may have to be thoughts about moving some people out of California entirely. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson. The City of El Cajon invites you to attend one of two home energy upgrade workshops coming up on August 13th and August 20th. Experts from the California Center for Sustainable Energy will be on hand to provide an educational presentation on home energy upgrades and incentives. The events will be held from 6 until 7:30 p.m. at Rennett Park Community Center at 935 South Emerald Avenue in El Cajon. To register, go to energycenter.org/August 13th or energycenter.org/August 20th.
Donna Tisdale is the elected chair of the Boulevard Community Planning Group in East County, and she's long been a champion fighting for the rights of rural residents against an onslaught of industrial-scale development proposals. So why did Soitec Solar snub Tisdale at 3 meetings that Soitec held with area residents on Soitec's proposed projects in Boulevard? Tisdale was not invited, and the snub was clearly intentional. Tisdale gave us emails proving that when she sent an email to Soitec's paid consultant, Jim Whalen, asking for an invitation, Whalen made clear that she would not be allowed to attend. His email said there was no disrespect intended, but that the meetings aimed to allow community members to, quote, speak with Soitec people frankly and individually without fear of being chastened. He told Tisdale that sometimes people who don't have your expertise and experience might feel intimidated to speak up. Banning an elected official that even Soitec's lobbyist admits has expertise and experience seems like a bizarre step, especially since Tisdale's own property is adjacent to one of Soitec's proposed solar sites, and thus she would qualify as both an impacted neighbor and as the elected planning chair to be included and participate in any discussion of that project's impacts. So what was the real reason why Tisdale was excluded? In meetings that Tisdale chairs, members of the community are typically treated with respect. I've attended many of those. The only attendees apt to be chastened, as Whalen puts it, are developers who dodge questions or fail to respect the community's concerns. Now, one member of the planning group, Bob Maupin, did get an invitation, and he did attend Soitec's latest private meeting. And so on Thursday night at the official planning group meeting, he read a report to planners that suggested the session was a propaganda ploy aimed at swaying public opinion without Tisdale around to correct inaccuracies. Maupin assured the group that the effort didn't seem to change the minds of savvy rural residents who did come, and then he offered some interesting insights. A former county employee who was involved in Soitec projects in the early stages is now working for Soitec, as we've reported before. This employee came to the meeting touting a final groundwater report by the consulting firm Dudek as, quote, exact science, said Maupin, who provided Tisdale with a copy of that report just in case Soitec didn't. Residents voiced concerns to Soitec directly about water districts in Hecumba and Pine Valley that are reportedly selling water for energy projects amid the worst drought in memory. Maupin said Dudek insisted there's plenty of water out here, never mind that almost 100% of California is in severe drought, or that Dudek had severely underestimated water usage at several major projects lately, or that the Eco substation near Cumba has used almost 100 million gallons of water. That's three times more than SDG&E predicted. Maupin also cast new doubts on groundwater claims made by Dudek on behalf of Soitec. On the groundwater graph of my wells, he said, they show the pump test happening the day before there was a drastic drop in the water level. I thought that was very convenient, and they believe that county staff is going to be dumb enough to fall for it, he informed his fellow planners. He also voiced concerns that mitigation proposed for Soitec's massive projects failed to offer any significant benefits for Boulevard. At Soitec's secretive meeting, Maupin says he learned that Soitec proposes to donate money for fire services and fund an ambulance for Boulevard, since the town doesn't have one. That sounds good so far, but he revealed, the ambulance will be stationed in Campo. That's because Boulevard's fire station has been underfunded and short-staffed, even having many dark days this year when the station was closed completely for 3 months in a row, as we previously reported. Maupin notes, we have a new fire station. The lights are on, but nobody is home. It has two fire trucks, but no staff or firemen, at least not yet. As additional mitigation for project health concerns, Soitec wants to donate money to an Indian health care center, and that's in Campo, too, not Boulevard. Maupin concluded that Soitec didn't seem to care if mitigation that the company claims will benefit Boulevard doesn't actually benefit the town. And the person most apt to ask those kind of hard questions wasn't allowed to come to Soitec's meetings. Perhaps Soitec wasn't worried about members of the public being chastened. Perhaps the company sought to fast-talk the public without the public's duly elected representative on hand to chasten Soitec's own representatives on some obvious flaws in its plan. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
It's back to school time at San Diego State University, which is welcoming 4,600 incoming freshmen and 2,800 transfer students. Orientation events greeted the newcomers, along with over 5,000 parents and guests, with information on class registration and degree requirements, tips for success, and the SDSU fight song. SDSU's Vice President of Student Affairs, Eric Rivera, says orientation helps students feel connected and excited about their education at SDSU and know how to get support. It also helps parents be involved and connected, too. It's a big job to welcome 12,000 people or so to the campus. Aztec News reports that by the end of new student orientation, SDSU's dining staff will have served up over 2,100 pounds of ground beef and 2,000 pounds of chicken. Each day during the orientation, over 200 faculty, staff, and students pitch in to help make the orientation a success. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Consumers have launched an online backlash against Adriana's Insurance Service after the company delivered 5-gallon buckets full of coins as payment for a $21,000 settlement to an elderly man who was assaulted by a company employee. NBC TV in Los Angeles reports that due to a medical condition, 73-year-old Andre Carrasco is unable to even lift the heavy buckets of coins, let alone count them and deposit them at his bank. Now, an East County Magazine investigation has found that Carrasco is far from alone in his criticism of this company. Complaints abound on the Internet. Adriana's Insurance has just one star on Yelp. That's the lowest possible consumer rating. And recent ratings link to news articles on the company's treatment of Carrasco. But many older ones also cite a variety of complaints against the company. The Better Business Bureau has not accredited this company, but does list several California locations for Adriana's Insurance, some of them not rated, others with ratings that range from a high of a C to a low C-. Numerous consumer complaint sites on the Internet include warnings about Adriana's, using terms such as rip-off, thieves, and avoid them like the plague. But ironically, the company's slogan is Circle of Trust, according to its website. East County Magazine also spoke with Nancy Kincaid in the California Insurance Commissioner's Office about the matter. She told us that, unfortunately, there is no regulatory statute that would allow the office to take action against this insurance firm for paying off its settlement debt in coins. But, she added, it's really disappointing to see that a licensee by the state of California would behave so unprofessionally and reprehensibly, especially towards a senior citizen. Online consumer activists have posted the customer service phone number of Adriana's Insurance for those who wish to voice their views of its service to Carrasco. That number is 888-344-7058. Again, 888-344-7058 if you wish to give them your views. The company has declined to return media calls so far on its actions. Payment in coins is prohibited by some entities, such as the IRS. You can't pay your tax bill in pennies. Businesses are free to refuse coins as payment if they choose, but unless a lawsuit settlement specifies the form of payment that's acceptable, payment in coins is considered legal tender, even if obnoxious when a weighty load is dumped off as payment for a disabled senior citizen. So, what's to prevent this company or others from staging similar stunts to get back at consumers they don't like in the future? One potential solution to protect consumers from vengeful corporations would be for the California legislature and/or Congress to enact a law giving all consumers the right to receive payment of legal settlements in checks or money orders, not loose change, and in California, to empower the insurance commissioner to take action against companies that engage in such clear harassment of consumers, whom courts have held are entitled to settlements for corporate wrongdoing against them. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. The United States Fish and Wildlife Service has announced that no more genetically engineered crops or pesticides toxic to bees will be used at any national wildlife refuge across the country. This brings protection to wildlife in over 150 million acres of federal land, including refuges here in San Diego County. The Center for Food Safety, a consumer advocacy group, says the significance of this decision can't be overstated. Fish and Wildlife Service is the first federal agency to restrict the use of genetically engineered crops and neonicotinoid pesticides in farming in the United States. In an email sent to members, the center calls this action a long overdue step towards preserving our native ecosystems and their plants, bees, birds, aquatic animals, and other wildlife from the harmful effects of genetically engineered crops and pesticide use. It also shows that the grassroots and legal muscle of consumer groups is a force to be reckoned with, even for a powerful federal agency. For the past decade, the Center for Food Safety spearheaded 5 separate lawsuits challenging these harmful practices on wildlife refuge regions across the country and stopping them region by region. Because of these successful local actions, courts have concluded that genetically engineered crops on refuges endanger the very spaces and species that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services are tasked with protecting. So the Center for Food Safety filed nationwide legal petitions demanding the Fish and Wildlife Service stop the practice nationally. Now the consumer advocacy group is locked in a new court battle to next hold the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency accountable for its failure to protect pollinators such as bees and butterflies from these toxic pesticides.
This is Miriam Raftery with a story that should be music to the ears of aspiring music students at San Diego State University. SDSU is launching a new program aimed at empowering music students to run their own successful businesses. Open to students in all music disciplines, from classical voice to jazz and composition, the Music Entrepreneurship and Business Program is a professional Bachelor of Music degree with a specialization in entrepreneurship. An article by Beth Downing-Chi, posted SDSU's News Center, reports that the program is a partnership between the College of Business Administration and the College of Professional Studies and Fine Arts. Associate Dean Donna Connedy says students need help in today's highly competitive environment and that the new program will provide them with confidence and skills to be successful entrepreneurs. While other colleges around the nation offer programs geared to help musicians in commercial music fields gain entrepreneurship skills, SDSU is believed to be the first university in the nation open to any artistically qualified student. If successful, the program could become a model for other departments on campus, such as design, theater, and film, to boost career opportunities for creative students through similar entrepreneurship programs. Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, and I'm here today with Larry Poole. Larry is a professional horseman who lives right here in San Diego's East County. He's also an actor, a stuntman, a movie wrangler, and a trail boss with the Hole in the Wall gang. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Thanks for having me, Miriam.
Now, you have been involved in so many different things, it's hard to know where even to start, but I understand that some of the movies you've been involved in were filmed right here in East County, so let's start there. Tell us about a Sierra Nevada gunfight.
We filmed that out in Descanso on Boulder Creek at the Devil's Punch Bowl.
Very famous landmark out here over by the Three Sisters Falls.
Beautiful location, and we were able to film with some A-list Hollywood stars, Michael Madsen, mm-hmm. John Savage, Kirk Harris.
Without giving anything away, what's the movie about?
It's set in the 1870s gold rush of Southern California, right after the Civil War.
Mm.
It's about a Civil War veteran who, with his son, comes to Southern California to hunt for gold.
And what did you do in the movie?
I supplied the horses and did some of the stunt riding.
Oh, my goodness. Stunt riding, I guess, is a pretty exciting field. How on earth did you get involved in that?
Been riding horses since I was a young child and was able to pull off some great scenes with crossing the rivers and made some good horses to put the actors on. Just had a great time.
Very good. Do you ever get hurt doing that?
Couple of times.
Couple times. So what are some of the other stunts you've done in the movies?
You know, anything from getting attacked by zombies to crossing Death Valley in a covered wagon to swimming horses across rivers.
Wow. And I saw a photo there of you standing on horseback even, so you've got a lot of acrobatic skills must take to do that.
Who are some of the celebrities, the movie stars that you've been in pictures with?
Danny Trejo, the star of the movie Heat. John Savage from the movie The Godfather and Deer Hunter. Michael Madsen from all the Quentin Tarantino movies. Mark Boone from The Sons of Anarchy.
I think there's a Star Trek actor as well.
Tuvok from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
So you must have quite the family photo album there. Is the genre of Western movies making a comeback?
I hear it's the biggest selling genre of all the American films overseas. They love American cowboys overseas, and we hope to see Westerns make a comeback.
Interesting. Well, that would certainly bode well for the Western settings that we have across East County, including the ranch where I met you out there in Descanso, the Buckle Ranch. They had some really interesting buildings that I guess were just recently constructed. Everything from a blacksmith shop to a barn looked like a movie setting. What are some of the other settings that you've filmed on location at besides the San Diego area?
Well, we've filmed at Paramount Ranch Movie Studios. We've filmed at Melody Ranch, Gene Autry Studio. And we filmed on location in Death Valley, San Bernardino, Ventura County, where they filmed Little House on the Prairie. We filmed in Borrego.
So what's next? Do you have anything else coming up?
Possibly have one coming up in November up in L.A. We'll be filming a Western.
Now, another movie coming out, I understand, is called Mountain Duel that was also filmed out here. Can you tell us a little bit about that movie?
That was actually filmed in Descanso also. Great movie. It's in the post-production phase right now.
And what era is that set in? Can you tell us a little about the plot?
That's a Bigfoot movie.
Bigfoot. So we've got Bigfoot right out here in East County, at least on the silver screen.
And you'll see some great San Diego footage in that movie also. It just, this area translates so well onto film. It's just a beautiful area to work.
Fascinating. I understand they're looking for a distributor, so watch for that one soon, too. What are some of the other things that you've been in, TV, movie?
We, earlier this year, filmed Quick Draw up at Paramount Ranch. That's showing on Hulu right now. It's original programming for Hulu. That's the new media.
Very interesting. And Rise of the Lone Star Ranger, I think, is another recent film you had some involvement with.
That was filmed at Paramount Ranch up in Hollywood, starring Danny Trejo and Jason Patrick.
Now, you also participated in a pretty big ride recently, I understand. Tell me about that.
Had the honor of riding with Gene Glasscock, the long rider.
And how long was the ride?
The ride went for 3 years from San Diego to Jekyll Island, Georgia, and back to San Diego.
My goodness. And it was a mule-drawn covered wagon, I understand. What portion of that did you go along on?
We crossed California twice, from San Diego to Yuma and back.
Kind of like in Death Valley days.
Kind of like in Death Valley days.
There you go. Now, you have a trail ride coming up, I understand, with the Hole in the Wall Gang, which is a Western reenactment and riding group out here.
We have an annual ride that culminates yearly in Borrego Springs for the Borrego Desert Days Festival. That will be finishing on October the 26th.
And when does it start and where?
Starts the weekend before. It's a week-long ride, heading north on the Pacific Crest Trail to the Warner Springs area, and then veering east is the way we normally do it, and we ride into Borrego Springs and kick off their Desert Days Festival.
Very interesting. So the public is certainly invited to that, and they can come see you at that particular event.
They can see us at the Borrego Days Parade on October the 26th.
Now, your group has been around since about 1940, I understand, the Hole in the Wall Gang. How did it all start?
We were started by returning World War II veterans that had a love of horses and horsemanship. They started a nonprofit benefiting local charities that have horse interests. We currently turn a lot of money to the Magic Horse. That's one of our favorite charities off of El Monte Road.
I'm familiar with them. They do amazing work out there helping disabled children with a therapy program on horseback, and it helps them improve their coordination, and some very good people out there.
I've seen it for myself, the wonderful things they do. And it's just amazing to see how a horse can reach into the closed-off mind of an autistic child and open them up. And I've been told that nothing else worked. And yet, that small child that had severe disabilities just seems like a normal child to me. We've dealt with horsemanship for the handicapped in the past and a number of other organizations, but usually it's for the children, although lately we've been getting more involved with the Wounded Warrior Foundation.
Yeah, and full disclosure here, the Hole in the Wall Gang was one of the Western reenactment groups that also donated their time at our recent benefit for our nonprofit, East County Magazine, and our wildfire alerts out in Descanso, and I know that everyone enjoyed the show there. You've got another event, I think, coming up in the spring with a different group you're involved in. Can you give us some information about that?
In April, we're going to be appearing at the Night of the Horse in Del Mar.
Mm-hmm. And what is the Night of the Horse?
Night of the Horse is a yearly event centered around the Del Mar National Horse Show.
A lot of East County people involved in that, I imagine. Lots of horses out here.
I understand they're signing up the Victorian Roses Ladies Riding Society, and we've got some Hollywood acts coming down. Professional horsemen from around the country are going to be involved.
You've worked in a lot of movies, a lot of Hollywood celebrities, and a lot of different things, I'm sure, that go on the set. What's it like working there on the set, and do you have any particular memories that stand out in your mind about your movie career?
Well, you know, it's harder work than I ever gave it credit for. Long days, typically 16 to 18 hours, very tiring, and a lot of fun.
Well, it must be great to be living out the dream, so to speak, really doing something that a lot of people probably only dream about and that you and the others involved in this get to do.
I feel very fortunate to be involved. Met a lot of great friends. The folks I've worked with in Hollywood have all been fine, upstanding people. I've enjoyed meeting all of them and working with all of them.
Now, where can people get more information, Larry, if they want to find out about the Hole in the Wall Gang or about some of these movies? Is there a website you can suggest?
Of course, you can always Google Night of the Horse Del Mar and Hole in the Wall Gang Lakeside.
There you go. And the movie that's coming out that's on the shelves now is Sierra Nevada Gunfight, if you want to see some local scenery filmed right here in Descanso. Very good. Is there anything else, Larry, that I didn't ask about that you can think of that would be interesting that we should talk about?
Well, I think we've covered everything that I felt like I had to get off my chest this morning, Miriam. Thank you very much, Miriam. It's been a pleasure.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for joining us on 89.1 FM Descanso.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Gray Feathers with a Tribal Beat report on East County Magazine. Ethnobotany is the study of how people in various cultures utilize native plants. This includes plants used as food, clothing, currency, in ritual, medicine, dye, construction, cosmetics, and more. The Barona Cultural Center and Museum and the Barona Indian Charter School have partnered together to practice ethnobotany. Kumeyaay News reports that this year, participating students from 7th and 8th grade classes at the Barona Indian Charter School studied the science of cultural plant use and how to preserve and prepare plant specimens. As part of the program, the students researched the scientific names and the traditional Native American use of plant specimens from the museum's collection, which includes samples gathered on the Barona Reservation by Elizabeth Winsong in the late 1970s to early 1980s. The entire process was documented digitally. In this age of genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, devastating wildfires, dwindling open spaces, The plant specimens become increasingly valuable. Global warming is shifting the range of plants, and plants from all over the world can be introduced into the region. This can be devastating, as seen in the Anza-Borrego Desert, where the Sahara mustard plant is choking the wildflowers. Native plants are disappearing, and so are their uses. The students were tasked with supplementing each specimen label with a descriptive paragraph including characteristics, origin, scientific nomenclature, its name in the Kumeyaay language, and traditional uses. A great deal of information about the traditional uses of plants is still intact with tribal peoples. The museum staff also consulted with Borona tribal member and language expert Pat Kuro and the tribe's language preservation team to teach the students the Kumeyaay names of each plant and create recordings of the plant names in the Kumeyaay language. In the past, the program's research results were only accessible in the classroom. Now, the new online exhibition allows students and Native American scholars everywhere access to the research data. The Borona Cultural Center is the first museum located on an Indian reservation in San Diego County. It's located just 1 mile north of the Borona Resort and Casino. It is open Tuesday through Friday from noon to 5 p.m. and on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. To see the magnificent heritage project, visit the Borona Museum website at boronamuseum.com.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
Hello, San Diego. Welcome to Vines and Wines. It's a radio show that introduces you to many of the rising new superstars and energized people in the local wine industry that will forever change the landscape of San Diego as it emerges into a brand new wine-growing district.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show, and today it's my pleasure to introduce our listeners to the brand new host of Vines and Wines, Don Retkoff. Greg Manis, our founding Vines and Wines host, has just gotten too busy out there planting vineyards all over East County, so he's asked Don to take over the duties of covering our local winemaking beat. It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. Don is a wine connoisseur who studied winemaking in Napa Valley, and currently he teaches viticulture at Cuyamaca College. We're delighted to welcome Don to our show.
Hello, listeners. This is Don Retkoff, your intrepid reporter for East County Magazine's Vines and Wines. We're out on tour today in Ramona with members of the East County Vintners Association, and we're touring in Ramona to visit the Ramona wineries. And we'll have here at our first stop Michael Moore and Terry Kearns of Ramona Ranch Winery, and Michael is also the newly elected president of the Ramona Valley Vineyard Association.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks for coming out today.
And we have about 25 people on tour today. So, Michael, tell us a little bit about Ramona Ranch Winery.
Well, we got started in 2006 making wines and from local grapes, just doing an amateur, and then started winning awards with our wines, and in 2009 won a really big award with the Amateur Winemaker Competition for Winemaker Magazine.
And that's a nationwide or actually international competition.
Absolutely. And that really kind of kicked us into our commercial mode, started making wines commercially after that.
All right. How many vines or how many acres do you have planted here at Ramona Ranch?
We have 10 acres on property, and we've got about 2,000 vines in the ground right now with plans to double that, hopefully, over the next few years.
And what is the, at this point, what do you think is your best varietal that's growing and making the best wine?
We have Tannat planted. Tannat is a very tannic grape that is a lesser-known southern French varietal, and it's making a really good single varietal right now.
And we're playing with Symphony, which is a hybrid that was created by UC Davis back in the 40s. But I think what Ramona is going to be known for are the Southern Rhone varietals, Syrah, Tempranillo, and we're seeing amazing things with Sangiovese, Sangiovese Grosso. Sangiovese happens to be my favorite.
And I've had some other Sangioveses. It does seem to grow really well here in San Diego County. Mm-hmm. And Sangiovese, for those of you who don't know, is what's grown in Chianti, Italy. So Chianti is our Sangiovese. So tell us a little bit about the difficulties and the joys of growing here in Ramona.
The heat that we get in Ramona during the mid part of the day kind of shuts the vines down. That'd be one of the things that makes it challenging to grow grapes. The growing region itself with the ocean influence overnight really cools the grapes down at night, so they hold their acid, and that'd be a benefit.
Yeah, one of the things I like to say is that grapes like what we like. They like to have a little cool breeze, some dappled sun, and nice fresh water. And we have all those things in Ramona, and I think it really lends itself to a quality grape coupled with our unique terroir. If you've been up to Ramona, you see the rocks, the limestone, the granite.
Yes, Ramona is one big hunk of granite. So this is a working ranch. How many head of cattle do you have here?
Well, we only have one cow or steer named T-Bone.
Which is what I had last night. Oh, no, not that T-Bone, the other T-Bone.
Don't tell T-Bone. No, he's a pet. We rescued him from a 4-H kid. We're very active in the horse community. We've got chickens, goats. So we have a lot of fun when we have families come up to the winery and actually take them down to the barn, see the chickens, the goats, the cow.
Collect eggs.
As the president of the Ramona Vineyard Association, can you tell us about how many wineries are there now that are licensed and bonded, and about how many vineyards or growers are there in Ramona?
Well, we have over 100 plus growers in Ramona, and we have about 26 bonded licensed wineries, and I believe all of those are open to the public right now.
And mostly, if people do want to come up and come tasting, we're open on the weekends. The majority of the wineries still have daytime jobs. You can log on to the RamonaValleyWineRegion.com, read past issues of the magazine, and download the latest current map, which shows you all of the tasting rooms in and around Ramona and the Highland Valley area, their contact information and hours of operation.
Well, thank you very much for sharing a few minutes of your time with us today, and we'll be back soon.
Now, about 25 wine lovers turned out to attend that tour of Ramona's wineries. Each winery has its own ambiance, from the Western motif at Hellenbach to the subterranean wine cellar tasting room at Turtle Rock. Don Rutkoff said he was impressed with the quality of many of the wines on the tour, which you won't find in the retail stores or on restaurant wine lists, because these are small producers who sell all of their wines at their weekend tasting rooms. Many of them are winning medals, however, in wine tasting competitions both locally and nationally. East County Magazine looks forward to covering similar tours in the future in places like Campo, Dehesa, Potrero, Jamul, and other rugged outposts in the Rocky Heights and valleys east of San Diego, where new vineyards and wineries are sprouting up like wildflowers. You can read Don Rutkoff's Vines and Wines column now for more coverage of our local wine industry on our website at eastcountymagazine.org.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lanes with your baby mine. You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign. That she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.